scum of Joe Bud Mission Street. This is BeelBud.com, the week in Georgia and English, coming to you from San Francisco's Mission Hub in the heart of startup land. Today is Thursday, the 5th of November, 2015. On this date in 1605, Guy Fawkes is arrested in an attempt to blow up the British Parliament in the Gunpowder Plot. Ever since, England has celebrated Guy Fawkes Day, where they burn the famous Catholic in effigy in a charming but unsettling ceremony that, by the way, George Washington really didn't like a lot and was shocked that his officers and men got excited about that. 1831, Nat Turner, American slave leader, is tried, convicted, and sentenced to death in Virginia. 1854, British and French troops defeated the Russians at Inkerman, Crimea. 1862, Abraham Lincoln removes George B. McClellan as commander of the Army of the Potomac. 1872, Susan B. Anthony is arrested for trying to vote. 1917, the Everett Massacre was an armed confrontation between police and members of the Industrial Workers of the World Union, or Wobblies, in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. 1930, Sinclair Lewis becomes the first American to win a Nobel Prize in Literature for his novel Babbitt. 1935, Parker Brothers launches Monopoly. 1994, at 45 years old, George Foreman becomes the oldest heavyweight champion when he knocked out Michael Moore in the 10th round of their WBA fight in Las Vegas. 2006, former president of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, is sentenced to death for the massacre of 148 Shia Muslims in 1982. 2007, the Android mobile operating system is unveiled by Google. Birthdays are Eugene Debs, Will Durant, Vivian Lee, Roy Rogers, Sam Shepard, and Tilda Swinton. And doctor, public policy genius, and author of the Radharani book Complications, Atul Gawande, is 50 years old today. Read that book if you have not, or give it to a Georgian friend. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. As ever, this podcast was written by Ari Swieka. Thanks again for those posting on the forum, particularly this from Evgenia, posted on Halloween. Thank you for giving a heads up, Ari, Vice News, upcoming reports on Russia's creeping annexation of Georgian territory. I've seen some good reporting by Vice about Ukraine. As to the New York Times article in the accuracy of Russian bombing during the 2008 war, the Russians aren't the gang who couldn't shoot straight. Russians bombed the territory of the cathedral in Zemo-Nikozy 32 times. I was in Nikozy in November 2008. Know the bishop of that diocese, Metropolitan Isaiah, saw the bombing damage the bomb and bomb fragments. Thankfully, no one was killed in the bombing of the cathedral territory, but villagers were killed in Nikozy. The bombing of the cathedral territory, including a monastery and bishop's residence, ties right into Russia's campaign to evade all evidence of Georgian culture, to erase all evidence of Georgian culture and history from the occupied territories and those along the occupation line. During the 19th century rule of Georgia by Russia, the Russians were not dropping bombs, but they did all they could to replace Georgian language and culture with Russian. If you'd like to comment on the forum or ask a question, go to tobeelpod.com or send us an email at tobeelpod@gmail.com. Following up on the alleged coup plot in Rustaviori, late on the 29th of October, wiretapped recordings of two phone conversations were leaked between Misha and Rustaviori TV head Nika Gvaramia and between Misha and one of the UNM leaders, Giga Bokeria. In a conversation with Gvaramia, Misha discussed defending Rustaviori TV by erecting barricades if the government tries to take over the TV station, hold out against the court ruling if it rules in favor of former owner Kibar Khalvashi, to get lots of people, have several lines of defense, and hold out for weeks and tell Gvaramia that if the authorities come to take over, quote, you must go to a revolution scenario, and that eventually it will end up with shooting. The audio records of the two conversations were published on the Ukrainian website uareview.in.ua. Conversation with Gvaramia was on the 19th of October. At the time, they thought the court would give a verdict on the 22nd and that there would be an immediate enforcement of the change in ownership. Second audio tape, Saakashvili discusses with Giga Bokeria what he told Gvaramia, then talks about the situation, about the need to barricade the TV headquarters, and Boyevikevi, meaning tough guys. Bokeria said that Rustaviori doesn't have any Boyevikevi. Misha says that the party should provide them, and again, if there's a fight, they should stand firmly for at least a week, and it will make things pretty difficult for the government. And again, Misha said that faces should be smashed, and if shots are fired, let them shoot. They talk about the inaugural, international reaction to the Rustavioli ownership dispute case. Misha calls them idiot foreigners. Boccheri and Guaramia both confirmed the authenticity of the recordings and both said they were recorded illegally and that it confirms that the government is carrying out mass illegal surveillance. Guaramia said that while Misha is his friend, he did not follow his advice about barricading the TV headquarters. Misha said on his Facebook page that no one should be surprised that they are defending the last fortress of free speech, which amounts to the struggle for the existence of Georgia. If we defend our dignity and if we don't give up freedom, he, meaning Bidzina Ivanishvili, will share the fate of Yanukovych. As a reminder, last week, a devious Russian self-proclaimed Ukrainian WikiLeaks site released a transcript of a conversation between Misha and Boccheria about a coup plot. On the 24th of October, the State Security Service then said it was launching an investigation of the alleged coup plot questioned by Boccheria, and they questioned Boccheria. By the way, Guaramia noted that the only legal ground for monitoring his phone calls would be for a criminal investigation, but the conversation that was wiretapped on the 19th of October was before they launched the coup plot investigation. He also said it confirms his allegations that someone from the government had earlier blackmailed him to step down from the TV station or they would leak his conversation with Misha. After these wiretaped conversations were released, the Rustavioli newsroom released a statement on behalf of its journalists. They said they strongly distance themselves from any type of violent scenario, that their editorial policy is not related to any political party's goals. Their goal is to perform journalistic duties. Then, on the 30th of October, the State Security Service said that it is looking into the leaked wiretap recordings as part of an ongoing investigation into an alleged conspiracy to overthrow the government. Prime Minister Garabashvili talked about wiretapping in a live televised statement. He described the people in the recording as immoral towards Georgia and Georgians, but then he continued that the security services have full control of the situation to protect citizens and called on the population to keep calm, stand together despite political differences, and not allow unrest. He continued that law enforcement agencies will neutralize and eradicate any possible provocation and warned people to think carefully and not to unwittingly become a blind weapon in someone else's dirty plans. A few minutes after the Prime Minister's TV announcement, Rustavioli head Guaramia also spoke in a live address to say that the broadcaster will no longer call on viewers to rally in defense of the channel. He explained that the government did everything to push Rustavioli into speaking about the need to defend itself after being deprived of the right to a fair trial. Another UNM parliamentary leader, Dato Bakradze, said that UNM will continue to struggle, but through constitutional means, for freedom of speech and for defending Rustavioli. President Margvelashvili called for calm, saying that the era of revolutions in Georgia is over and that those planning for that are completely out of touch with society and political reality. He then repeated that foreign officials, which is Misha in this case, should not intervene in Georgia's domestic issues. On that note, on the 30th of October, the foreign ministry summoned Ukraine's charge d'affaires, relating that Tbilisi was extremely dissatisfied over Misha's remarks, which contain calls posing threats to security and stability in Georgia, and that it does not correspond to the spirit of friendly relations. This was the second time a Ukrainian diplomat was summoned by Tbilisi over the past 8 months because of Misha. In February, Ukraine's ambassador was summoned after Ukraine President Petro Poroshenko appointed Misha as his advisor. The U.S. Embassy in Tbilisi said in a statement on the 31st of October that it is unacceptable for anyone to advocate for violence in politics. Tbilisi also officially sent a letter of protest to Kiev denouncing the Odessa governor Misha encouraged a coup in Georgia. While Guaramia and Boccheria confirmed the authenticity of the phone conversations, Misha wrote on his Facebook on the 1st of November that the phone calls were intercepted and doctored by the Russian intelligence agency. Misha's earlier comments on his Facebook about the conversation were deleted. On the 2nd of November, Garibashvili sent a letter to Ukrainian President Poroshenko expressing concern over Misha's remarks in the leaked wiretape recordings, which were directed against the current government and contained specific calls for anti-state and violent actions. The letter requests President of Ukraine to take interest in this issue. More leaked stuff. The Ukrainian website continued leaking phone conversations between Misha and other people where he talked about Rustavi Odian bloodshed with Georgian singer Soponi Zhiradze and another one with UNM lawmaker Nugzar Tsiklauri. Then the other site, Ukrainian WikiLeaks, released a screenshotted image of an alleged Viber conversation between Misha and U.S. Senator John McCain. McCain tells Misha that he made mistakes about having bloody scenes and revolution on TV, something about Rustavi Ori, but then McCain says he secured things for Misha's guys. There won't be an investigation. They won't be touched, but still everyone is angry with Misha for causing problems. McCain also claims that he is coming to Georgia on the 10th of November with a group of senators. Misha and McCain send each other smiley emoticons. Amazing that John McCain knows how to use an emoticon. This is unconfirmed information. The images were shared on other sites, but when we tried to open the original, its 404 page is not found. And, of course, the uproarious Viber chat session was by a non-native English speaker who seemed to have watched some of John McCain's footage. So he has my friend in there a few times. Elsewhere, Russian news sites are also reprinting the Ukrainian WikiLeaks reports that claim to show Misha and McCain exchanging messages and plotting to get an American plane shot down in Syria and framing it as if the Russians did it so that Russia and America won't get along and so they'll be able to keep the Ukraine crisis going. Ukrainian WikiLeaks is a site that has recently showed up based in Russia. Following up on the actual Rustavi Ori trial, the verdict was passed in favor of former owner Kivar Khalvashi. Then late on the 5th of November, meaning today, the head of Rustavi Ori Gvaramia was dismissed by an order of Judge Urtmelidze. Two new directors were appointed in its stead, Revaz Sakharashvili and David Divali. This despite a ruling earlier in the week by the Constitutional Court that an immediate enforcement of the verdict is not allowed. This story is still developing, so keep following. To recap what happened leading up to this, on the 2nd of November, the Constitutional Court ordered the temporary suspension of a clause in the Civil Procedures Code, which allows a court of first instance in civil matters to order an immediate enforcement of a decision, even if the verdict is appealed. Rustavi Ori's lawyers had earlier launched a complaint with the Constitutional Court and filed its own lawsuit against the parliament, asking to suspend passage 8 of the 286th article of the Civil Proceedings Code, which is the legal basis for immediately enforcing a court ruling. The idea was that if Kibar Khalvashi received a verdict in favor of the Rustavi Ori ownership dispute, he would seek an immediate enforcement of the court's verdict. So the Rustavi Ori people wanted to prevent that. Constitutional Court explained their decision in this way, quote, in this case, the disputed regulation would be an irreversible violation of the rights of the lawsuit authors. Tbilisi City Court Judge Tomas Urtmelidze said he would deliver the Rustavi Ori court verdict on the 3rd of November at 5:30 p.m. There was a lot of anticipation leading up to that. As we said, the court ruled in favor of Khalvashi. A lawyer representing Rustavi Ori said that the verdict will be appealed, but it will take 4 to 6 weeks before the ruling goes to the Court of Appeals. The appellate court's decision can also be appealed, and the final decision will be up to the Supreme Court. Judge Urtmelidze was still reading out his verdict when Rustavi Ori lawyers walked out of the courtroom in protest. The main lawyer, Zaza Bibilashvili, commented that the dark dictatorship of Bidzina Ivanishvili has been formalized. With this ruling, the judge declared contracts through which Khalvashi sold his shares to Rustavi Ori TV in the course of 2005 and 6 null and void, and ordered his ownership of the broadcaster to be restored. As a reminder, Khalvashi claimed that he was coerced into selling the television channel by the then leadership of the country in 2006. The respondents had filed multiple motions requesting Judge Tomas Urtmelidze's recusal based because they believed that he would be biased in favor of the plaintiff on the grounds that the government had levers to exert influence on him because of criminal proceedings that had been launched against his mother. After the verdict was announced, Prime Minister Kharibashvili, who was in Estonia on an official visit, called for everyone to refrain from dramatizing and politicizing, because he never does that, of the Rustavi Ori dispute. He said he's not really familiar with the details of the case, but that what's most important is that the Rustavi Ori journalists are protected by the state. In the same speech, he said that not a single citizen in Georgia is now above the law, including Kinsey, which is the Georgian word for coriander, but also is a reference to something that Misha said in the leaked Wiretape phone conversation, saying that if he was wrong about the government spilling blood over Rustaviotti, then you can call him Kinsey. So much for not politicizing. On the 4th of November, the U.S. Department of State spokesman John Kirby said that the U.S. will, predictably, continue to closely monitor the appeals process in the Rustaviotti ownership dispute. There are by-elections in Sacagawea and Martavilli districts, Sacagawea and Cajete near Tbilisi, Martavilli and Eastern San Magrelo. Single-mandate constituencies on the 31st of October to fill vacant seats in Parliament. Only the Georgian Dream ruling coalition and the Alliance of Patriots, who are creepy Kremlin stooges, nominated candidates. Most of the opposition parties announced that they were boycotting the members of the parliamentary by-elections, the members of Parliament by-elections in August. In Sacagawea and Cajete, Oates Neva candidate was Tamar Chidashelli of the Republican Party versus one of the leaders of the Alliance of Patriots, Irma Inaishvili, very well known. And then three independent candidates. There are only two candidates in Martavilli constituency in San Miguelo, Soso Danelia of Georgian Dream Alliance and Alliance of Patriots Eter Medzvelia. Georgian Dream candidates won, but in Sacagawea there was a tight race between the Republican Party's Chidashelli and Inaishvili of the Alliance of Patriots. Chidashelli reportedly won by a margin of only 560 votes. According to the CEC, only 34.5% of the 46,000 eligible voters turned out in polling stations in Sacagawea. During the vote counting, returns from two precincts were delayed as Inaishvili and her supporters were rallying outside the polling station in the village of Ujadama, claiming that the votes there were manipulated in favor of the Georgian Dream candidate. One of those precincts had a special polling station for military service members deployed at the Mukrovani base. About a week before the election day, Inaishvili was calling to scrap the special precinct because she said that only a handful of the 500-plus servicemen of the base were local from Sacagawea, and she was accusing Defense Minister Tinico Chidashelli, who's one of the leaders of the Republican Party, of trying to manipulate the poll results through the Army servicemen votes, a long tradition in Georgia and a lot of other places. Before the election, there was speculation about Georgian Dream trying to tacitly support Irma Inaishvili in winning the vote in Sacagawea by-elections in order to sideline the Republicans, but BI denied this in an interview earlier. As a note, by-elections were also held in Dmanisi, Vani, Chobi, and Sacagawea to fill vacant seats in their local councils, or Sacrebulos. Parliamentary Speaker Data Uzubashvili, who is from the Republican Party, commented on his Facebook that the members of Parliament by-elections in Sacagawea has sent a number of important signals for the Georgian Dream ruling coalition that voters are now more demanding, so they need to do more work, more direct communication to prepare for the upcoming parliamentary elections. He also emphasized that the Georgian Dream's strength is in coalition unity. Prime Minister Kadavashvili was on a two-day visit to Tallinn, Estonia on the 2nd of November. As mentioned earlier, he met with his Estonian counterpart, with President Tumas Hendrik Ilves, from New Brunswick, New Jersey, by the way, as well as Foreign Minister and Parliamentary Speaker. Kadavashvili is accompanied by Economy Minister, Agriculture Minister, and State Minister for European and Euro-Atlantic Integration. When the two prime ministers gave a joint press conference, it was dominated with Rustaviotti questions, and Kadavashvili said during the press conference that Misha's place is in prison. On to more productive things, the two prime ministers discussed visa liberalization, since the European Commission is expected to release its report on Georgia's implementation of the VLAP in mid-November, and the Estonian prime minister said that the Estonian business community is interested in investing in Georgia. Kadavashvili then went on to, went to Lithuania for a one-day official visit on the 5th of November, today, in Vilnius. He met with the prime minister, President Dalia Grybauskaitė, and the Speaker of Parliament. Georgian and Lithuanian prime ministers chaired the first meeting of the Bilateral Intergovernmental Commission on Economic Cooperation. Kadavashvili also visited the NATO Energy Security Center of Excellence. During the visit, the city square in Vilnius was renamed Tbilisi Square. Tbilisi City Municipality gave them some decorations. Foreign Minister Georgi Kvitakashvili is on an official visit to the U.S. in D.C. this week. Met with U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Anthony Blinken And together they held a fifth plenary session of the U.S.-Georgia Strategic Partnership Commission. The commission was established through strategic partnership charter signed by the two countries in January 2009. Commission and its working groups address four policy areas: democracy, defense and security, trade and economy, and people-to-people and cultural exchanges. On the 3rd of November, after the commission meeting, the U.S. Department of State released a joint statement with Kvitkashvili where they affirmed a commitment it made in Bucharest in 2008 that Georgia will become a member of NATO. The statement also underscored Georgia's intensive reforms and progress through the annual national program, the U.S.-Georgia Commission, and the implementation of the NATO-Georgia Substantial Package, my favorite international document name. Kvitkashvili also met with U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman, and there was a second meeting of the U.S.-Georgia High-Level Dialogue on Trade and Investment. The President of Azerbaijan, Ilham Aliyev, is paying an official visit to Georgia on the 5th and 6th of November. He met with President Margvelashvili. The two presidents signed a joint declaration on deepening cooperation, political security, trade, economic, transit, culture, education, science. They visit the predominantly ethnic Azeri town of Marnauli, and Aliyev is also meeting with Khadabashvili, who, as a reminder, paid a brief, unplanned mop-up visit to Baku last month related to the Gazprom mess. Azerbaijan had parliamentary elections on the 1st of November, which was won by Aliyev's Yeni, or New Azerbaijan Party. Surprise, surprise. The main opposition boycotted the elections. The OSCE refused to observe it. There are a lot of big holes in the sidewalk along Rustaveli Avenue. Tabilpod.com's exclusive information from our extensive network of spies indicates that it is for signs for tourists. So let's see what shows up. Another former Georgian official was appointed to a top position in Ukraine on the 4th of November. Khatia Dekanowidze was appointed head of the National Police in Ukraine. She was appointed by decree and has been nominated by Ukraine's Minister of Internal Affairs, Arsen Avakov. She used to be Avakov's advisor and also opened a political school in Kiev last year, along with other Georgians. Previously, Dekanowidze was the head of administration of Georgia's National Security Council. She was also the head of the police academy and was education minister for a few months in 2012. The World Congress of Families, which is a conservative U.S. Christian group, is planning to have their 10th Congress in Tbilisi for the 16th to 18th of May, 2016. Last conference was wrapped up in Utah in the United States, was attended by Levon Vassadze, where they announced the next location would be Georgia. They chose those dates because it would coincide with the new 17th of May Day to Strengthen Families and Honor Parents, recently created by Patriarch Ilya II. The managing director of the World Congress of Families explained that, quote, Georgia is the ideal place to discuss the existential threats to family, faith, and freedom from modernization and sexual revolution. The theme of the 10th World Congress of Families is Civilization at a Crossroads, the Natural Family as a Bulwark of Humane Values. As a reminder, the 17th of May is also International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, Biphobia, and just in general a pro-tolerance day. You'll remember the anti-gay riots in Tbilisi on the 17th of May, 2013. And that just last week, people responsible for the violence, priests, were acquitted by the Tbilisi City Court, although they were on film. Following up on previous week's stories, on the 30th of October, Justice Minister Ted Tsiloukiani announced that Misha would be stripped of his Georgian citizenship because he now has Ukrainian citizenship. But Misha got Ukrainian citizenship late May and still had his Georgian until now. Justice Minister Tsiloukiani said that at the time they didn't have official confirmation from the Ukrainian side about Misha's new citizenship, so they decided not to hurry to launch the procedures to cancel the Georgian one. But now, in late October, Public Service Development Agency received notification from the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry confirming that Misha received Ukrainian citizenship so that they will launch the procedures and will send it to President Margvelashvili for confirmation. Misha then said in a video on his Facebook, in his typically optimistic, self-congratulatory, and somewhat deluded way, that by revoking his Georgian citizenship, they are closing the door on him for the 2016 presidential elections. Yeah. parliamentary elections. Officials in Tbilisi said that the timing of the announcement has nothing to do with the coup plot, leaks, and allegations. It's just a coincidence and a technical process. 7 members of the European Parliament were in Tbilisi on the 2nd to the 4th of November for the inaugural EU-Georgia Parliamentary Association Committee meeting. It's a new body that is part of the association agreement and is meant to scrutinize details such as the visa liberalization process and the deep and comprehensive free trade area. Delegation from the Israeli parliament, known as the Knesset, is visiting Georgia from the 5th to the 7th of November. They are meeting with their Georgian counterparts, Datu Tsipashvili, Mark Velashvili, Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, and the Patriarch Ilya II. Georgian Israeli Parliament Speaker signed a memorandum of cooperation, share experiences on specific issues. Tsipashvili said that the Israeli parliament can share its experience in the Green Knesset concept in their efforts to make parliament accessible for people with disabilities. A delegation including American, Canadian, Lithuanian, Romanian, and Swedish permanent representatives to the OSCE were on an official visit to Georgia, arriving on the 1st of November. It's the first visit of OSCE permanent representatives to Georgia since July 2008. They also visited the administrative boundary line with South Ossetia. The National Bank raised key refinancing rates by 50 basis points to 7.5% on the 4th of November. The Central Bank's Monetary Policy Committee cited increased inflationary expectations behind tightening the monetary policy. Georgia's annual inflation accelerated to 5.8% in October, above the central bank's 5% target. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee explained that they expect inflation to remain above the target level to 2016, and it will only lower to 5% in the second half of 2016. On the 27th of October, the central bank sold $20 million foreign exchange market to support the lari. It was the central bank's 7th intervention this year, with total sales of nearly $247 million. There was the first meeting of the Investors Council in Tbilisi, which was hosted by the government and attended by state officials, business community, and representatives, EBRD. The council was created in May 2015 through a government initiative with EBRD support. It's to bring together major players in the investment market. Fadi Asli, who's chairman of the International Chamber of Commerce in Georgia, wrote an open letter to Prime Minister Garibashvili informing him that some of their clients are being harassed by the Revenue Service, the Financial Police, and now also by State Security Police. He said they originally went on a talk show to reveal how they were being audited and had their bank accounts frozen, and that the day after that, they were informed that they will be audited by the State Security Police, and there was pressure being put on the general manager of the company by ordering his university student son to join the army, which never, ever happened because he's in the university and it doesn't have to, but can be called up. So it's totally discretionary by the commissar. In the letter, Asli challenged the prime minister and asked, "You claim that businesses are totally free in Georgia. Is this the freedom you're talking about?" Following up on previous month's stories, the Tbilisi City Court found 3 former law enforcement officials guilty of premeditated murder and faking official documents in the 2006 tennis court case. 2 of the former law enforcement officials were sentenced to 12 years in prison and the other to 8 years. As a reminder, the 2 young men were killed in the tennis court case. Vazagashvili and Alexander Kubalov were in their car with friends in central Tbilisi in 2006 when they were shot and killed by police. At the time, police said that they were returning fire after shots were fired from within the car in April 2007. The authorities closed the investigation into allegations that the police used excessive force for lack of evidence. Then, after the change in government in 2012, new evidence emerged after the family of one of the slain men had alternative ballistic examination results that reportedly showed no shots were fired from inside the car. The case was thrust into the spotlight again in January 2015 when the Vazagashvili father was killed by a bomb at his son's grave in their village. When the investigation was reopened, the prosecutor's office revealed that the story was that one of the men killed had exposed that the brother of one of the police officers involved was involved in drug-related crimes, and the murder was planned as revenge. That kind of stuff happened a lot and sounds very plausible. There were reports that the portfolios of State Minister for Reconciliation, State Minister for Diaspora are going to be abolished, but this was denied by the ministers for now. Minister of Reconciliation revealed that they are discussing offering Abkhazia a special status in the Constitution in a bid to repair relations, but since Abkhazia feels that it is independent, I'm sure they don't care very much. On the 31st of October, Russian border soldiers kidnapped two more Georgian farmers who were herding their cattle near the administrative boundary line with South Ossetia. Georgia's state-owned shareholding company, the Partnership Fund, and China's Silk Road Investment Company signed a memorandum of cooperation to implement several projects in the textile industry in Georgia. Facebook blocked the official account of the State Security Committee of South Ossetia. According to a poll conducted by Gallup International Armenia in September, 54% of the respondents supported unification of Armenia and Russia. According to Russia's Deputy Minister for Economic Development, the reactivation of the railway that is supposed to cross from Abkhazia to Armenia via Georgia has been impeded by, an excellent line, objective constraints. The Russian and Armenian transport ministries are reportedly in discussions on it. One of the objective constraints, no less, is that the railway would need to go through Georgia. From 2016, the National Bank is introducing new 20, 50, and 100 lari notes into circulation. The colors will be brighter. The design's a little different. National Bank President Georgi Kadagidze said also that they made changes in order to upgrade the quality of the notes. They're also better protected from forgery. Polish construction services and supply company Tynes Capital Group purchased the majority of a concrete production plant in the village of Koki in Somogrelo. They said they want to get involved further in important infrastructure projects in Georgia. Representative of the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction visited Tbilisi and signed a memorandum of understanding with the Ministry of Justice. They said they're engaged in a five-year program that will include steps to enhance Georgia's monitoring and knowledge base on the drug situation and how to respond to it. An Indian Muslim man who is an accountant who lived in UAE says he was denied entry to Georgia last month because of his beard. He came for a holiday. When he was at the border control, a lady at the counter immediately called for another officer and directed him elsewhere. Before even looking at his passport, he said, they told him that they could not allow him to enter for security reasons. A Japanese company was defrauded of more than $1 million by a Georgian citizen who hacked their email and got employees to transfer funds to his personal account. They contacted the prosecutor's office. Fraudster's been found. The money will be returned. Ministry of Regional Development is spending 10 million lari to rebuild a 28-kilometer road connecting two villages in the mountainous Khevsureti region in a bid to promote tourism. It also allows better access to their home villages, which are now more or less deserted because there's no road. The new Roshka Arkhoti Road is due to open in 2017. Pianist Nino Bakradze won the 2015 Louisiana International Piano Competition in the U.S. Contest is for students from music schools across the world. She's at the University of Arizona's Fred Fox School of Music. The captain of the Lelos, Mamuka Gorgadze, was named the 2015 Rugby World Cup Dream Team. As a member of it, National Agency of Public Registry is digitizing and creating an online archive of historical maps of Georgia. They're open to the public on the site, and they're also cool. You should look at them if you get the chance. It is at www.registry.gov.ge. That's R-E-E-S-T-R-I.gov.ge. The film Moira by director Levon Tudberidze won Best Film at the Asian World Film Festival in Los Angeles. The film is about a man who was recently released from prison, trying to get his family out of poverty, buys a small fishing boat, hopes for the best. Four Georgian films are in contention for prizes in the Eastern Neighbor Film Festival in the Netherlands. The award-winning Corn Island short film Reflection, shot in Ushguli and Svaneti. Director Shalva Shingelia's documentary piece, The Ruler, about the fate of a Stalin statue in a small town. Dinola by Mariam Kachvani on the devastating human experiences of certain strict Svani laws. In Parliament, on the 28th of October, Parliament approved government-drafted bill, the new law on public service, aimed at supporting public servants in gaining relevant qualifications, also a framework for state officials to hire public service employees for agreement-based administrative work. New law was passed on the 1st of November, making it obligatory for foreign businesses employing Georgians abroad to register their entities with Georgian Public Registry Agency. The businesses have until May 2016 to address the state agency. If they don't, their business activities will be classed as illegal and businesses will have to pay a $500 fine. Now listen, local businesses in Georgia that employ foreign staff must also register their businesses with the public registry agency. Understandable. But on the other hand, this government doesn't have a great record of implementing new administrative processes in a way that isn't a giant mess for businesses and people and everyone concerned. And pretty soon they're going to say that those businesses have to prove through some incredibly burdensome, ridiculous administrative process that they couldn't hire a Georgian to do the same job. Meme this week is a video going around Facebook of a really, really bad performance of Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball by a contestant on Georgia's version of Georgia's Got Talent. Stuff to read, political reporter Maxim Tucker profiles Ukraine's most popular politician according to a recent public opinion poll. That is Misha, the governor of Odessa. Misha wants to be leader of reforms, and he hinted that if he had to be prime minister to do it, he would, because a strong Ukraine is the biggest check on Russia. Previously, Misha denied ever wanting to be prime minister. Simon Ostrovsky of Vice News has an episode from the administrative boundary line, as we mentioned last time, with South Ossetia. They follow up and expose how shepherds are often kidnapped by Russian troops, which we report on every single week, how their families are left helpless waiting for them, and also it catches up with some high-level officials to talk about Georgia's policy vis-a-vis Russia. Tbilisi Fashion Week's coming up. Vogue looks at the Tbilisi fashion scene and says all of the it girls are from Georgia. Heather Yunt of IWPR investigates why the International Criminal Court is only opening its investigation into the 2008 war now, 7 years later. Open Democracy looks at the unemployment problem in Georgia. Georgians came to Tbilisi from the regions, originally from Abkhazia, seek to eke out a living in markets, women selling used clothes, men looking for construction work if they can find any. People can't really rely on the state. There are no unions, so they resort to family networks to get by, but it doesn't really do much for poverty. Kiev Post talks with Misha's advisor, Zuda Adeshvili, former prosecutor general, and also former justice minister, on the need for dramatic reform in Ukraine's prosecutor's office. International Policy Digest gives a roundup of the political rivalries in Georgia over the past month, from the leaked rape videos and anti-UNM attacks to political interventions in the Rustavi II trial. The Telegraph has a list of European cities you never thought to visit, but that you should, which includes Tbilisi. Their critic says, and I quote, "It's fine Art Nouveau buildings and pretty traditional balconied houses are what some would call shabby chic." The guy doesn't really say who those some people are. And at long last, CRC finally enters the holistical onslaught and gives us 9 things politicians should know about Georgian voters. Georgian Journal writes on My Georgia Photo Collection, which is cool. The National Bank has a site where you can see the new banknotes. All this stuff's posted on the forum. This week's geocapital number is 2.2%. According to Geostat, this is Georgia's real GDP growth year on year for September. Real GDP growth reached 2.5% for the third quarter of 2015 year on year. However, back in May, the IMF projected Georgia's economic outlook look as 2% in 2015. The IMF resident rep in Georgia noted that it's more than they had expected. Good job, Georgia. Tbilisi is one of 100 cities hosting the 2015 Google Developers Group DevFest, which is Google's annual developer festival this week from the 6th to 8th of November. You've got to register at DevFest website if you want to attend. In Tbilisi, there's an exhibit by contemporary Japanese artist Shu Kubo, who does traditional Japanese paper cut art, or kirigami. The exhibition is at the Shalva Amiranishvili Museum of Fine Arts and is running until the 11th of November. Save the date. The American Friends of Georgia will be celebrating Christmas with a gala on Saturday, the 12th of December, 2015, at the Radisson Blu Iberia Hotel in Tbilisi. For those in London, on the 9th of December, analyst Tom Duvall will give a talk to the British Georgian Society on Georgia's zigzag democracy. Contact the British Georgian Society you want to attend. Also in London, the School of Oriental and African Studies, SOAS, will be hosting a talk by Dr. Rebecca Gould on the Caucasus as World Literature, exploring prison poetry from Iran in the 12th century, as well as 20th century Georgian poet Tizian Tabidze, and how these writers use poetry to engage with the politics of Christian-Muslim differences on imperial borderlands. Sounds awesome. So on the 25th of November, contact SOAS if you want to attend. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango X-Ray, Tango Bravo Uniform Kilo. Our email address is tpeelpod@gmail.com or post to the form on the website www.tpeelpod.com. And we will finish with, from 1974, this is Stevie Wonder, and You Haven't Done Nothing.